Hello and welcome to Only Fools and Brotherly Forces, the Only Fools and Horses Rewatch podcast with me, Jamie, and my brother Bobby. Good evening, Bob. How is everything going?
Good evening, Jamie. It is very well, thank you.
In actuality, it's no different than the start of our last intro, because for us, it is the same evening, whereas last time we weren't sure if it was a double episode or not, and sort of retrospectively recorded our intros and outros. This was always going to be the slog, so this has been a long night for us. We actually started recording, probably the latest we've ever started recording. It was 9 p.m. for me and 10 for you. So we're just getting to the second half, and it's already, well, nearly midnight for you, eh?
It is indeed, but it's all right. I'm still on holiday. I've got nowhere to be tomorrow. So I'm energised. I'm ready to go. It's a great episode. Award-winning episode, in fact. So I looked a bit more into that BAFTA award as well, and I saw that not only did Only Fools and Horses win for sort of light entertainment or whatever it was for that year, but David Jason was nominated as well, although sadly didn't win. He lost that year to Victoria Wood. He was nominated again the following year and lost again to Rowan Atkinson for Blackadder Goes Forth. And finally, in 91, he did win for Dell.
Nice.
He had won an individual BAFTA just the year before dates in 1987 for Porterhouse Blue, which was a TV miniseries he did, for which I know from his autobiography he was very proud, although I personally don't know anything about it. But yeah, it would be a couple more years.
I've never heard of it before.
No, I'll be honest, I know very little about it, just from what he talked about in the autobiography. But it'll be a couple more years before he gets his much-deserved solo BAFTA for the character of Derek Trotter.
Yes. Well, good time to pivot into the story. So we're going to pick back up. Dates have all happened. It's now Monday night, and Del is in Raquel's flat. Stick a bunny in me pocket. I'll fetch the suitcase from the bank. So quite a nice scene, this one. Del is sort of being nice and lovely and close, and after they've had a bit of a chat, he comes into the kitchen and he's having a bit of a serious talk, and Raquel feels like she's trying to deflect it away a little bit, and she's either scared of what might happen or just not quite where he is straight away there, or expecting something else.
Yeah, it starts off as a very lovely scene. I mean, he's telling more lies about his Ferrari that he's got, that he decided not to bring, which is just annoying because you just don't need to do it and you're setting yourself up for trouble. But the date's clearly gone well. They are getting on very well. And Del, out of seemingly nowhere, suggests that maybe it'd be a really good idea if he became a Mason. Because Boycie mentioned that he had a Mason, a fellow Mason that was a TV director, and as Masons do favours for each other, if Del Boy became a Mason, maybe he could give Raquel the break, which, if she got, would make her a star.
Yeah, I don't know why Del thinks that this is actually ever going to happen. I mean, not only does Boycie not want him to happen, even if he does manage to blackmail him into it, which he does, surely it's not going to get past the next stage anyway, because someone's gonna screw it up. But nevertheless, he thinks it's a good idea. He comes back and lays out the She Who Dares line, which is like a nice little change up on the He Who Dares, and starts to make his phone call to Boycie.
I really enjoyed this little peek into Boycie's house again. The dog barking, Marlene shouting,
get out of there, Joke!
Checking herself in the mirror before she answers the phone, and then putting on a really soft voice.
That reminded me of, I didn't at the time, but now when you said that, it just reminded me of Hyacinth Bouquet. Yeah.
The Bouquet residence, the lady of the house speaking.
Yes. And keeping up appearances. Yeah.
But Del comes up with a pretty decent scheme. He, after he's had a bit of a chat, Boycie says that it's not going to happen, and he says that he'll do a Boycie a favour by not mentioning a little bird that he had in Sheffield, and very cleverly manages to get Marlene to say these words.
Proper angler's knife, but it must be made of Sheffield steel.
Sheffield?
Give us that phone! Yes, Boysie. Thank you, boys. Thank you. Bye.
I must admit, this was one of the biggest laughs of the episode for both me and actually my missus when we were watching it together. First episode we watched together in a while. It just, the way that Boysie runs back in is just so good. And he's right. Dell wouldn't dob him in. Of course he wouldn't. He is not a grass. And the way he does this is brilliant. And I love the idea that he tells him later that of course he was never going to tell him. He was just winding him up.
I really like Dell's reaction to it, actually, when it cuts back to Dell and the phone's not even in his house. It's like next to his ear. And he's just sort of got this big old smug grin on his face. Like, thank you, Boysie. No problem, Boysie.
The one thing I did want to mention here that was a bit odd was Dell brings up Albert's birthday and invites Raquel to the party. Now, he's done nothing but lie about who he is and what he does from day one. What's his plan here? Like, he's going to go from, I've got a New York office, to I've not brought my Ferrari tonight, to 5 days later, inviting her down the Nag's Head to meet Albert and Rodney and all his mates. Trigger.
I mean,
what's the plan here?
Dell, if nothing else, is famous for doubling down. I would imagine he just like pre-briefs everyone in the pub.
But just the fact that in the pub would instantly make everything unbelievable. It's very odd. It seems incredibly short-sighted of Dell.
But it doesn't matter because she's not coming anyway. We get back in the Nag's Head and Albert is banging away at the keys again. Singing He's in the Mood for Love, which is a nice little great little track there. And it's a great contrast. As last time Albert was playing away, he got a nice slow clap, but this time he's got a big old round of applause for his birthday, dressed up in full naval gear, hat and scarf and all.
Yeah, he almost looks like a little child who's been dressed up to go to the beach. It's just a little bit too much, but fair play. I mean, if I fought in a war, I'd probably never take off my medals. But we then get the just slight change here. We see this new corner, the booth that has been created. That is where Rodney and Dell are sitting, enjoying Albert's antics. Mike is less than amused, as in the 30 seconds that we've seen of Albert, he's broken every single rule that Mike had previously stated.
Yeah, he's livid.
He does a nice little joke here about his slurring of his words.
What can I do, Michael? You've given him too much to drink, haven't you?
He's started to slur his words now. He's almost offended some of the ladies.
How do you mean?
Well, he wanted a rum and black. He ordered a bum and rack.
You want to cross your fingers he doesn't fancy a buck's fizz, Mike.
And Rodney asks about the Masonic Lodge, and Dell says that the committee is thinking it over. And they re-establish here for the third or fourth time that Raquel is not around and is out to drama class. But Dell's saying it's all worth it.
He's being very lovely here, isn't he? He's clearly smitten with Raquel.
I think it's more so than we've...
But he's always smitten, isn't he?
He is actually always smitten, but I think we genuinely feel it this time because it's long and we've seen the date and we've, as an audience, probably fallen for Raquel as just a lovely person and probably quite good for Dell. Mm. I think we can actually, for the first time, sort of share those feelings with him, whereas most of the time we're wondering what the bloody hell he's playing at.
Yeah, I mean, I've spoken quite a lot about the... many of the female characters on Only Fools and said a couple of them have maybe been in a fun way you don't like them. Maybe you kind of love to hate them. But none of them you've really wanted to see again, quite frankly. But Raquel is great. She's interesting and nice and funny. I mean, she's way out of Dell's league because she's actually cultured and Dell is just pretending to be. And you almost feel a bit sorry for her in that state because... there's definitely going to be a fall down to earth at some point. But so far, she has come across as nothing but nice and not just kind of lovely in a...
airhead or like...
not lovely in a shallow way,
just genuine,
but lovely in a genuinely interesting, very nice person way, and you want their relationship to work out. And I think it's the first time we've really had Del in a relationship that we want to work.
So that's pretty fair.
Except maybe Junie. A lot of people love Junie.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, she gets. I've seen that around a lot online, that people say, you know, Junie was maybe the one for Del.
And she is basically just the female equivalent of Del, though, really, isn't she? But possibly even more stupid.
Yeah, I think before Raquel, Junie's been one of my favourite of the female characters. Even though she's got some odd qualities, I enjoy her character, and I enjoy the way it's portrayed.
So Del calls over Boise and asks about the black ball situation, and it basically is just a bag full of black balls.
Have you ever seen the bottom of a rabbit's hutch?
As you said in the previous episode, this shouldn't really have been a surprise to anyone. Del seemed completely unsuited to this group, and I don't know if his plan was just to hopefully go around and bribe all of them, but it sounded like he didn't do anything. He just hoped that Boise would back him up enough, and then Del would show up and his charm would win the day. But they're a bunch of, you know, ponces. They're not going to have any time for the likes of Del.
No, he was always barking up the wrong tree with that one.
Definitely. So Del is absolutely gutted, wondering what he's going to tell Raquel. But then they are distracted as Albert bursts into song once more, but something a little bit less classic.
All together now! Oh, I put my finger in the woodpecker's hole, and the woodpecker said, "Oh, this boy, don't take it out, take it out, wiggle it about, remove it."
I was wondering if you'd done some weird research on this.
I didn't, did you?
No, I didn't. I just thought it was the sort of thing that you would.
I wish I had known.
Origin stories of this ridiculous song. It sounds like some sort of old war style, keep your morals up styly song. And Trigger comes up and starts having a bit of a chat with Del about the van screaming around in the last week. And there's a really good bit of tactile acting from David Jason here. It just feels really good as he's sort of tapping Rodney, like, you know, WTF, mate, what the hell have you been doing to my three wheel van? Like a father telling off a kid when he's been naughty, sort of style.
It's really funny how, like, Rodney's desperately trying to deflect the problem, and then Trigger just comes up with another line to get him more and more in trouble every time.
And just as this is all happening, it gets a bit halted when suddenly old Bill come in. And, yeah, they want to have a few words with Albert.
Able Seaman Albert Trotter, late of Her Majesty's ship Peerless.
Aye, sir.
And this is just shot really well, and it just acted even better. This extra, I don't know if you had his name, but he is just game-facing the shit out of this.
Far too good to be doing the job that he's actually there to do.
Yeah. Buster Murrayfield is just like got this quivering lip as he's sort of like, what, why? And he's sort of holding his head down. And the change of pace is crazy here. We've gone from like Albert singing to then doing this song, Drunken Shenanigans. And although it's all a ruse, that 1 minute little screenshot was really, really well shot and acted. Made you believe that there was actually something amiss.
Yeah, definitely. It was very well done. The like you say, that guy is very serious, and it seems all very serious. And it's interesting how they've chosen to shoot it, because they've not hidden, big reveal, Raquel, much, or even really at all. They've decided to put her face there front and centre, which is interesting, because you just wonder... You wonder if they want people to notice, or if they're assuming people won't, or maybe they'll notice but they're not sure why she's there. I'm really intrigued to know what the director wanted there.
Because if you want the best, but you don't ask questions, then brother, I'm your man.
It's funny, I had this exact same query, but not at this point. because she's in the background, essentially, she's not very much in focus. And at this point, I don't think that anyone watching this for the first time, let alone, well, obviously the second time doesn't matter, but anyone watching this for the first time is going to realise that is Raquel. It's just that blonde hair, it doesn't even look like a wig when she's in the background. There's no way anyone's picking up on that. However, when she does pipe up and starts giving it a bit of enthusiasm.
Able Seaman Albert Trotter, you are hereby ordered by Her Majesty the Queen, by the High Lords of the Admiralty, and by all your friends and relatives.
That moment when she takes off her hat and reveals her face, I still don't know. It was at that point, I was then at where you were, when she's in focus and centre screen. I was like, how many people here are noticing at that point? Or as it goes on, when she's sitting on his knee, and you get that exchange in the eye look, and that is the big reveal moment, as it were. And you know, she's taking all her clothes off, everyone's in hysterics.
She's a stripper, by the way, for anyone who hasn't noticed.
Yeah. that catching of the eye is where the big reveal is, but I'm just not sure if you would pick up on it before then, but I would still say probably not.
It's very odd, because there's such an obvious moment where, of course, Del notices and she stops singing and everyone notices, but there's so many opportunities beforehand to notice. And from a directing standpoint, that just seems odd, because you feel like you'd want to control the moment that everyone found out. And they could have hidden her when she was reading out the first orders. They could have used some slightly different angles when she started taking off her clothes, which they kind of did, which was weird, because they show her talking, but then they hide behind her when she starts undressing, so you don't see her for a while, but then she sits face on and you see her again, but they still wait a few seconds. And it just seems a bit odd that you'd let people find out in waves. I would have thought you'd want to have that one moment. But
no, I think you're giving him a bit too much credit, to be honest. I think that the nature of how it's shot, that the production team and director are fairly confident, and for my money, quite rightly so, that it just wouldn't be recognised pretty much until the point that the reveal is there. I would say that people who are watching it first time, and bear in mind we're analysing it as always, people who are just sitting there watching an episode, and especially one that long, they're never making that connection. I don't think. If they've read it in the story beforehand, maybe so, but I would say 9 out of 10 people have no idea until that the reveal is actually given, and that spoon feed moment.
Yeah, no, you very much could be right. So we do have the big reveal. Del stands up, he's noticed it's Raquel. She's seen him, and then Boise pipes up.
Is this the actress you've been telling us so much about?
And it is followed by the most brutal laughing from everyone in the bar.
That's not Raquel.
Like, this is what would normally be in a nightmare scene. It's like something embarrassing happens and everyone is like looking and pointing and laughing. It's like a thing that very rarely happens in real life. And it's really brutal. And Dale storms out of the pub ashamed, just full of shame, and more than angry, it's shame.
Yeah, it's like a Happy Gilmore.
You're gonna die, clown! You think that's funny? I don't hear you laughing now! Whoa, whoa,
whoa. Yeah.
People telling him he's shit. You jack off. I thought it was brilliant because Dale comes out and just starts beating the shit out of the van.
Yeah, very much my style, that. I really like that. Nothing I love more than to kick the shit out of an inanimate object when I'm pissed.
Rodney doesn't really help the situation when he comes out and just says just a very unhelpful line that just completely triggers Dale.
Don't get out of your pram, Overy.
Don't get out of my pram. Don't get out of my pram. She just humiliated me in front of my friends.
Which is just like, at that moment when someone's pride has been absolutely ripped out, it's probably not the most sensitive thing to come out with.
I'm definitely going to find a really inappropriate time in the next month to say that to you, and you least want me to, and it's going to be hilarious.
But once a pod.
But he also says, "I don't think anyone noticed," which was funny because we've actually been here before.
Is this when the snake came out?
Yeah, well, Rodney yeah. had the exact same thing at the pub, surrounded by everyone, talking about how much he liked a girl, and his date, Yvonne,
yeah.
got up on the bar and started taking all our clothes off. I mean, she wasn't even hired that night, so it's substantially worse. But Albert said to him then, after that had happened, that "I don't think anyone noticed." And so it was funny to kind of reference that episode again.
Yeah, I kind of expected Dale to come out with the response line, which is, "Well, you stood on a chair to notice," or whatever the equivalent would have been for that. But Raquel comes out of the pub, and I don't know. They're both at fault here. That they've both told lies. Dale said, "Or you know, I might tell a porky or two," but it's hard. You can't really separate them. They're two good people who have try to tell some white lies and save the other or impress the other, and now they're in this horrible place.
Yeah, it's a really complex little moral quandary going on here. I mean, I really love the perfect smirk from Rodney when he finds out that Dell's been calling himself Duval. It's absolutely priceless.
I didn't see that.
Oh, it's so good. You just got to see it. It's just perfect amount of smirk.
Nice.
But yeah, they do have this little interesting moral debate, Raquel and Del Boy, as Del basically treats her horribly for being a stripper, where she points out, well, can't be anything wrong with being a stripper, you hired one, and pointing out they both told lies. And yeah, it is interesting, and I think you're right. I think you are meant to come down in the middle, and you do, of thinking, look, she's just a woman trying to earn some money, and she found a way to do it. You can't sit there and book someone like that and have them do that and think it's a funny thing to do, and then also hate the person for doing it. You can't hate a profession that you literally are supporting.
No, and especially if you're lying as well, you've got no moral high ground at that point. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
You're splitting hairs here, and I don't know. Both of their points are ridiculous. They do have a little argument trying to explain themselves or whatever, or proclaim their innocence. But realistically, I don't know if this is insensitive or what, but I kind of had no sympathy for either of them at this stage, which is a bit harsh. But I don't know. This is what happens when you watch the episode sober, I think.
I think I have more sympathy for... No, maybe I don't. I was going to say I have more sympathy for Raquel. Maybe I don't. You know what? I think you're right. I don't really have a major sympathy for either of them. They've both made their beds and they both had to lie in it. If Raquel's chosen to be a stripper, then it's always a chance that someone she's dating would find out about it. And Dale lied about who he was and where he was, and that was always going to bite him in the arse in some form. So yeah, I think odds are all even at the end of the day.
The only difference is that Dale's a lot more scarred about it because of how the situation's come out, whereas Raquel's more inclined to try and be saving it and erring on the positive side, although that's just how it's fallen down. But it does end in a bit of heart gone.
No, I was just going to say, I would argue that in terms of moving the relationship going forward, the situation, I have no sympathy for either of them. But going forward, I'm surprised with the reaction Del has had to her and the amount of lies that he's clearly told, that when Raquel has come out, knowing that he has a different last name and he is a market trader and all that sort of stuff, I'm surprised that she is so keen, clearly, to move, to keep going. Like, she's clearly trying to rescue the situation, even though...
Yeah, like, she doesn't even know Del at all, really.
No, exactly. You know nothing about him. He's lied about everything, and then he's just caught you doing that, and all his friends have laughed at you, and now he's run away in embarrassment. But she's very keen to carry the relationship on, which is kind of a surprise. I think that's a bit...
Is that naive, or have they just had a really good connection and she's looking past it, or maybe a bit of both?
You could look at it lots of different ways. You could play the naive sort of negative aspect, or you could play the, you know, strong independent woman as, you know, made her bet, you know, believes in her opinions and thinks she knows enough about him that she doesn't care about that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and she's willing to put it behind him.
Yeah, exactly.
But it does all end in a bit of heartbreak or heartache, because Del really does go just a little bit further than he should do and goes for the jugular.
Yes, of course I want to see you again, sweetheart. But next time I'll pay at the door like all the other punters.
And then he turns his back.
So brutal.
Literally like, is it Game of Thrones or something when they all turn their back? I can't remember what it is.
Klingons do it during the dishonouring procedure
yeah,
in Star Trek.
It is. It's Klingon dishonouring procedure.
Where he's been discommodated, is that what? Yeah.
So yeah, Del goes full Klingon. I'm so happy they managed to make that comparison.
It's funny. It's not funny. It's the opposite of funny. It's such a brutal line, really. Mm. And I think I know when I heard it straight away. I looked over. At my missus as well, and she was just like, "Oh," and I was like, "Yeah, it's bad." And what's good about it is they instantly reference how bad it is as well, because Rodney turns around and is just like, "Del, did not need to say that."
And no, it's writing genius for the other side. We talk about all the good things that Sullivan does and all the other stuff as well, but that is like just brilliant. Something that really cuts everyone deep, and there's it's like instant regret, you know, instant remorse as soon as she walks away. And we've all done it. We've all done silly things like that.
I think that's why I really liked it, because there have been times where I've said something horrible to someone and have instantly, the second they've walked away, or even before, they could still be in front of me, and I've gone, I didn't need to say that. I wish I hadn't said that. And so it was really good to see that little journey of Del, us not having any sympathy for Del, but then him taking it so far that actually he becomes the one in the wrong, but then has that instant realization.
And Del gets into the van, and it just all falls apart in front of the viewer's eyes. Just a brilliant little scene, a brilliant little bit.
Basically implodes.
This miracle comes from is a mystery. It's like the changing of the seasons and the tides of the
So it's the next scene, and we are at the calf. I did read loads of trivia about the changing of the calves.
Yet another calf I've written.
Yeah, but this is a return to the old calf. So there's two calves that they've used on two different episodes, but not in.
Is this the same calf from?
Yes, not a Royal Flash.
From Healthy Competition, is it the same? I'm not sure it is.
Yeah, I think what I read was they used that it's the same calf as a previous episode, but before Royal Flush, and then Royal Flush is the same as another episode, which was before the other one. So the timeline of the calf change is kind of ridiculous. But anyway, one of the
maybe he's
two
got
or
two,
three
maybe
calves.
He's got a chain going on, and he just alternatively works at either one.
Yeah, there we go, done.
Done.
Put
that was
to
easy,
bed, didn't we? How stupid do you feel, people of the internet? But Sid comes up asking about the rumours, and I did feel pretty bad for Dale when he's just trying to brave face about not being that seriously in the relationship.
Yeah, it's a horrible position to be in, and it's kind of explaining how difficult this whole journey is going to be for Dale, because you know everyone's going to be asking him about it, and it's all going to be about saving face. That was what bothered him so much.
But he's in pretty deep. I mean, realistically, that they'd only had two dates. One of them was.
But he's Delwyn. That's one more than he needed.
Yeah. Surprised they weren't engaged.
I bet he had a ring in his pocket.
But in comes Raquel, After we hear from the background Rodney getting an absolute bollocking from Nervous Nerys's mum.
Oh, hello, Mrs. Simpson.
What did you do to my Nerys? She come in shaking like a leaf, why as a cheek she was.
Oh, well, no, Mrs. Simpson, it was
yours. Just a nice little Easter egg, a little,
side
bit in there, which is good.
That was amusing.
Raquel walks in and she's just being lovely. Del's being cold as you like, barely making eye contact, barely talking, barely addressing anything.
I struggle with this because he realised he'd said something horrible and instantly regretted it, and yet the next opportunity they have to meet, she is completely letting him off the hook of that horrible thing he said and being a complete dick.
Yeah, I mean, Raquel's being lovely as you might expect, but Del is just struggling to let go of it, and it would be hard, but he's kind of trying to take some high ground or score some points. Like, the score is still unsettled, even though he regretted what he said. He still feels like he needs to point out how hurt he was, or how much it's affected him. Like, he's not ready to let go of it quite yet.
No, definitely not. Which, it's just such a shame. And Raquel basically explains herself, you know, and says, you know, it was an honest job, her plan, why she lied, her plan to give up the job before Del could have found out about it. I mean, and she's nothing but exceptionally reasonable.
Yeah, and even more than that, Del's trying to explain away some of the lies, and Raquel's just equal to it. When he goes to get whatever food, she says something about, oh, it's probably your New York office calling.
Mm.
And that's the break. Del's been stonewalling her the whole time. And when she actually drops in a little joke there and sort of just points out the error of his ways, and he smiles, and we get a tiny bit of redemption there. And we get this tease that actually maybe there's a way back from this.
Absolutely.
And it's kind of all over the place, but there's one really nice line that I really like from Raquel, which is just that real life sentiment, but maybe a bit of a reflection, a life lesson, something like that. Just a real life circumstance that I thought was quite beautiful.
For giving me back some self-esteem. I used to wake up in the morning, look in the mirror and think, oh, you again. After I met you, I used to wake up and think, great, another day, you're going to be somebody. This time next year, I'll be famous.
I just thought that was a really nice sort of real-world line, like something that everyone has gone through at some point, like when you're down and, you know, you're getting all the shit and you just wake up and you just can't be arsed. But a lot of the time, especially in new love, you know, you wake up like Zebedee and you've got a spring in your step and you're like, you know, yeah, it's me, fucking let's get on, let's you know, smash the ass out of this day.
That was a really, really great line, and it also explains why she's there and why she's kind of putting up with this from Del. And I'd actually had this exact conversation with my missus as we're sitting there watching this scene, and she's thinking like, what is she doing there, why is she giving him the chance? And then this line explains it, is when Del was being good, despite the lies, it was genuinely him, not a lie. The way he made her feel and the confidence he had in her and the confidence that he gave her in herself. Like that was the real Del. The lies kind of had nothing to do with it. And that's the person that Raquel wants to be with, that person who made her feel like that. And yeah, that is really, really important, I think. Well brought up. I'd not written a note, but the thing that was important.
But yeah, in true British fashion, we get a nice romantic moment spent as they share a piece of fried bread. But then Raquel drops a bit of a bomb.
Yes, a full-on ultimatum. She's been given an opportunity to take part in a tour in the Middle East, but she won't go if there's a chance that she can carry on seeing Del. No strings attached, nothing serious, just giving it a go. She will stay for him just for that chance.
Which is awesome. really, really nice from Raquel there, willing to just put everything on hold for even the chance. She's really, really sticking it all on the line for Del.
Yeah, it's a shame Del hesitates. I mean, really, it's just for the story so we can get the next scene, I feel, because they've had that moment of realisation where I think Del's already worked out that this is a very good idea. But maybe he does need to think about it just because of the social impact, really. He's got to think about what all his mates are going to say. He knows he's going to have to live with people bringing this up all the time. So I guess that's the bit to think about, the embarrassment factor. But I think in terms of him wanting to be with her, I think his mind is made up, even here.
So we're on to one of some of the final scenes now. We're back in the Nag's Head, and everyone is having a proper good laugh at Del's expense.
Because he ain't been in here since.
Yeah, we had a bit of thinking to do last night. He's got a sort of decision to make.
What's that? Whether to pay the bill for the stripogram agency.
Mike, you're getting bent out of order.
Not being necessarily insensitive as Del's not there, but they're all reminiscing about it, and you would.
Yeah,
you know, if you were in that. Yeah, it's not that bad, but it's definitely at Del's expense. But Rodney says that Del's been thinking about it and had a decision to make, and then Del walks in and says he's been thinking about it all night, but still gets the round in for everyone.
Everyone's very respectful to his face. Like, they stop laughing. They know they laugh behind his back, but it was all in good fun, and Del's walked in there with his head held high, and no one tries to knock him down.
But Del's decided to go for it. It's forgive and forget, and there's something a bit special there between them, and he's ready to give it a go. And it's really sort of bygones be bygones. Both Mike and everyone else is just being a little bit nicer, and it's all been de-escalated.
Yeah, there's a really nice little touching sort of brotherly love scene here where Del thanks Rodney for kind of standing by him through the embarrassment and helping him, I think, reach the decision. I think we saw it in that scene just before Raquel turned up and did her little stripping job, that Rodney seemed genuinely really pleased for Del and was really hoping that this could be something. He was excited to meet Raquel. And so he's been nothing but supportive. Another thing I just noticed, maybe I've just been living abroad for too long, but it did make me laugh how everyone's ordering drinks, like the scotches and beers, and Del's having a cocktail. He's ordering another round of, ordering a rum for Albert. It's not even 12 o'clock.
How do you know the time?
Because he's got to be there. He's got to be at Raquel's for 12.
Oh.
So he's rocked in there about 11 o'clock, and he's like,
Albert's smashing down the rum.
You all have a lager. Take one for yourself, Mike. Big old rum for the boy, for the old boy in the corner. And it's like, it's 11:30. Is this normal? Was this normal in the '80s?
That's brilliant. Albert's such a legend on his third rum by 11:30. Right here, right?
Yeah, I don't get to do much day drinking anymore.
But there is a big change of pace as the old Bill start to enter. And we see them checking out the three-wheel van, and they come into the pub, and all gets a bit of hand, and Del goes full rogue.
Oh, well, look no further, officers. It was me, Sir Faircop. I'd done it. You disappoint me, Uncle.
And we all know what happens here. It's kind of hard to make this some sort of reveal, but Del thinks that it's a con and laughs at Albert for a very uninventive way to get back at him. And rather, I don't have the words for what happens, but he literally grabs her blouse and smashes it right open.
I mean, I wrote on my notes earlier when we had Raquel's reveal, I just wrote stripper exclamation mark, and now I've written at this point not stripper exclamation mark. I mean, I don't know what Del is thinking here. I mean, yeah, of course it could be Albert getting even. I mean, even if it's a stripper, you don't. I mean, what are the odds that it definitely is? How can you be so confident after they've asked him a series of fairly reasonable questions? Although this is maybe going back to the fact that the naval officer guy was very believable. Yeah, maybe Dell has just a lot of respect for the extras that come with strippers. But it is. I mean, when you think about it for a second, just imagine what would happen if you did that.
I mean, that's exactly what it made me think. Is what are the actual repercussions? I mean, you probably would have got away with it a lot in 1987. I think you would probably have got away with a slap wrist, especially if you explained the situation.
I don't know. You're getting at least a big old fine, surely.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. That is the slap wrists. If you did that now,
you're getting time.
I think he would be made an example of and get lynched by feminists everywhere.
I think you'd be, even if you made the explanation would probably make it worse. You're looking at months, if not years.
But I do love the reaction from her. Her voice completely changes. I thought that this actress was a little bit hammy.
Oh yeah, she's terrible
in all her stuff. But the
so's the policeman. They're both terrible.
The police was slightly better, but yeah, not much. But the two words that she says, which are gold and just sounds great, and her voice has gone from high and hammy to just not going to be fucked with.
Lick him.
Devil like.
And that's it. He's getting escorted away.
He's the one who's driving me berserk. Why do only fools and horses work? La 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 la.
And so, Raquel is now walking out of her house to a slow boat to China.
Really nice little tune, that one. Really just fits this mood perfectly.
You know who's singing it?
No.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Is it her? Is it her?
It is her.
Yeah, I did know that. That's really weird. I didn't read that trivia anywhere, and I probably have not heard that bit of trivia for 15 years, and somehow, in the depths of my brain, just managed to remember it as you asked that.
It does sound just like we see her singing again in the future. But yeah, it's very nice that they got her to do it. I think it adds, even though they don't make a big thing out of it, it's not even in the credits. You have got to go and Google it to check. But it is, performed by Tessapique Jones.
And yeah, it's a proper heartbreaker. It really complements this scene really, really well. And it unfolds slowly as she walks out, and then Del is getting escorted into Nick for the end, for the close and for the button.
Don't believe me, but can I at least use your phone?
You'll have one phone call.
Thanks. What's the time?
20 to 1.
Oh, terrific. You don't know the code for Addis Ababa, do you?
So that is the end of Dates. That little graph that I showed you last week or a couple of weeks ago, I'm pretty sure this was like number 2 for the episode ratings. I might be wrong, but it's certainly top 5. So with that in mind,
oh, really?
What did you think of the episode, Bob?
I thought it was really, really good. As I just had another quick look here, it's actually equal to number 2 so far. Going forward, there are many higher episodes, but yeah, it is so far on equal with A Losing Streak and A Touch of Glass, only beaten by Hull and Back. And yeah, that's about right. That's where I'd put it. There's a few other episodes that I think we really like, things like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, that I'd also put right up there. But this is a very, very good episode. It has the big laugh out loud moments which you want, which I think have been missing in a couple of other episodes, the last special didn't really have that at all. That was a bit of a slow burner, but I think this took some of the positive slow burner elements from that, but then added a few big wow moments as well.
I'm going to sort of surprise everyone and myself here, and I don't really have any reason for it, but the episode is great, but for some reason I didn't enjoy it as much as I was thinking I was going to enjoy it. I don't know if it's because we bigged it up so much beforehand. I don't know if because some of the stakes weren't there. My inclination is to think that there is so much story arc and romance and content going on that actually some of the comedic elements have suffered for it. But I didn't find myself uncontrollably or belly laughing nearly as much as I thought. The big scenes for sure, there's a few massive payoffs there. And even though I love this concept and I love the change of direction, I loved Raquel and I really enjoy the story, I don't really understand why I felt a little bit disappointed. I can't really help it, and I feel really shit to say it because this is probably up there. Maybe it's not in my top 10. I'm sort of explaining it away, and maybe I thought it would be, and maybe that's what the problem is, but it fell short of my expectations.
Interesting. I think...
Weird, isn't it?
I think there are definitely funnier episodes, but I like this episode for its story, and I think it's almost like a little rom-com. So I think it depends if you look at it as... compared to maybe some of the 30-minute episodes especially that had a lot more jokes and were really funny and really bit hard. And this is kind of largely softer and slower, but with a few really good moments. But there was just a lot of nice performances in it and good scenes. And I just, as an overall journey, a bit like a, you know, a longer book, I just liked it for it. I liked the depth. And I thought it was well done. But I would definitely agree it's not one of the funniest. I think Frog's Legacy had the similar problem where it wasn't laugh out loud funny, but had a good story. This is that same element again, but a much better version, because this is much funnier than that.
I think I wasn't as emotionally invested in it a lot of the time. So Rodney's whole thing was by the by, and I didn't have much in there. I didn't sympathise with either of them because they'd both sort of been bad. Although I wanted Del to be happy, and I wanted the relationship to work, and I really loved Raquel as a character and found her lovely and endearing. I just wasn't emotionally bought into it in a way that I was heavily affected, and the comedy parts of it took more of a backseat because there was more story as well. So I've been more emotionally invested in episodes, especially something like He Wants to Be a Millionaire. That broke my heart. And I've certainly had a lot more laughs and found things hugely more funny. So as good as it is, I've have preferred a lot more episodes to this one. I really don't like myself for saying this because it's not the opinion that I thought I had before I watched it, and I didn't want to allude to this sort of as we were going through it, but I always knew that my end summary was going to be it fell slightly short of what I was expecting. Is that am I asking too much of it?
No. I think it's completely fair enough, because I had a lot of those sort of opinions of Frog's Legacy, that it fell a bit short and it put more emphasis on story than comedy, and I think it suffered for it. I think this did also put more emphasis on story, only the story was better, and then there was some big comedy moments to kind of make up for the focus on story, because you need that pitter-patter of jokes throughout, which I think it has, and then you need a few highlights to really give you something to remember at the end. I think it's all there, like formulaically it's all there, but I don't think it's an unreasonable opinion. I wouldn't shout you down for having it, and I wouldn't really argue against it.
No, and I will do myself a favour here and say as much as I try to be impartial for anything that is going on outside of Podworld, being so busy for these last 2 weeks, both pod-wise and not pod-wise, and just hot and bothered for weather and everything else going on. I think I just didn't give myself enough time to really enjoy it. Where, you know, I was saying about before about the pen down moments where I just take it in and enjoy the episode. I think I didn't do that. So I think it's as much my fault for this, and I'm completely holding my hands up to it because I don't like the words coming out of my mouth, but I think it's as much of my fault overemphasizing its shortcomings, whereas they would probably be admissible or dismissible, whatever the word is, but I think I've helped to accentuate those. All that aside, I do think it's genuinely a really good episode. My expectations were too high. If I reset my expectations, then it is a brilliant piece of writing. It's a great way to transition into a new era of Only Fools. The payoff big moments were absolutely brilliant. And yeah, it was still a great episode, but I just wanted to err on the things that I was plaguing on in my mind.
Nice. Well, I think we can officially call that a wrap on our little trilogy of big specials. It's been a slog. Three big specials, five big podcast episodes.
I'm quite happy to be done with them, just because I quite like the ease of format. When it's easy, we definitely have a lot more fun and enjoy it a lot more. But with these long ones, I mean, we've just done, 2.5 hours of recording for this episode. God knows what the finished product will be. And now I've got definitely about 8 hours ahead of me. So it does bring a little... I do love doing this podcast. It is something that I genuinely look forward to and spending time with you. But when the work-to-fun balance slightly goes more towards the work because of the time frames, then I am looking forward to getting back into the standard Series 6. And I think we should look forward to Series 6. What is our next episode?
It is the first episode of Series 6, Yuppie Love.
Ooh!
Just in case we weren't completely sure that is the angle we were taking, Del is going slowly going full yuppie.
It's all getting a bit Gordon Gekko now. And
very much so.
And now I can be genuinely excited. I think series 6 and 7. When does Jolly Boys come? Is that between 6 and 7?
Yeah, so it's the end of this series.
Oh, God. We've got such good weeks coming up. So, although it's been a hard last three, we have got some absolute winners coming up and getting into the heyday of Only Fools and Horses. It's going to be winner and winner.
This is the real big boys now. You've got, looking at that graph that you sent me last week, there's 4 episodes in a row, which are some of the highest rated. I'll take some issue with some of them, but we'll cross those bridges when we come to it. But these are generally, yeah, like, as you said, this is considered peak Only Fools and Horses, I think, now. Between these specials, the next series, and then Jolly Boys, I think this is absolute peak and going to be loads to go through. Thoroughly looking forward to the next series.
Excellent. Well, thank you as always for joining us. I'm going to leave you with a little bit of music for this. And I thought I would go a little bit in-app for this one. There was quite a few different little bits of music in this, but there was one that I thought just complemented the episode perfectly, which is the original of I'm in the Mood for Love, which is dates back to 1935. You won't be unsurprised to hear, as a sort of pre and sort of during war era song. So it was originally, the music was originally written by Jimmy McHugh and the lyrics by Dorothy Fields, but it was introduced and sung by Francis Langford in the movie Every Night at 8. Released that year, which is the version I'm going to play, but it's been sung by loads of different people. It was done by Vera Lynn later in that year, and Cliff Richard, Shirley Bassey, Jules Holland, Barbara Streisand, Rod Stewart. Yeah,
everyone's done.
The list is just ridiculous. But going with the absolute original from Francis Langford there, which is just a really beautiful version of the song as well.
Lovely.
Lovely. Thanks for sitting out this slug with us, guys. Do really appreciate it. And thanks as always, Bob. Had a shed load of fun.
Always a pleasure, Jamie. Looking forward to next time. Thanks very much, everyone.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks very much for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook /Only Fools Brothers, or on Twitter, we're at Only Fools Bros. Or if you want to send us a longer message, you can email us at onlyfoolsbrothers@gmail.com. Also, really appreciate it if you could give us some sort of rating or review on your podcast app of choice. Thanks very much. Goodbye.